With CEO Stories, we explore the personal journeys of our guests, and in doing so, we sometimes touch on sensitive topics or traumatic experiences that our guests may have encountered. In today's episode, there will be brief mentions of violent crime and issues concerning mental health. Hello and welcome to CEO Stories, the podcast where I delve into the minds and journeys of some of the region's leading and up-and-coming CEOs. I'm Henrietta Brewley and I'm Chief Exec of the Greater Birmingham Chambers of Commerce, and I'm delighted today to be joined by Zoe Bennett, Motivational Queen and Founder of Training Personified. Hello, Zoe.
Hello, Henrietta. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, before we get into the podcast in Maine, just tell us a little bit about you.
Well, apparently other people say I inspire confidence in them and I create transformation for them, whether it's in personal development or helping them excel with an entrepreneurial mindset. So for me, I'm all about uplifting other people to be the best version of themselves, whether it be one-to-one or within a group setting.
And when you think back over your journey about, you know, how you've found that that is what it is that inspires you, that's who you are, that's who you want to be, are there any moments that really stand out to you as particularly defining in your career?
I would say defining in my career is learning about other people, and what you see is not always what you get. And I think that for me is one of the biggest lessons that I've learned financially as well as personally. So yes.
And we'll be delving more into some of those lessons learned along the way over the course of the podcast. But as regular listeners to the podcast will know, we do like to go right back to the beginning when we're talking through our guests' journeys. And as I say, today you are Zoe Bennett, BEM, multiple award-winning motivational queen. But when we go right back to the beginning, how did it all start? I mean, am I right in thinking you grew up in Lancashire?
Yeah, born and bred in Preston, Lancashire. He heard the accent come out there a little bit. But for me, I observed a lot. My dad was definitely one of those pioneers, who led the way for other people. So he started the first ever West Indian Sports and Social Club, a community entity, to bring people together and fight off racism. So what he would do, instead of doing these protests and all of this being, you know, radical, because that's just not his nature, he's a bringing everyone together type of person, he would have like cricket matches, domino matches with the local police and bring everyone from every ethnicity, every colour, every background together. So that's why I'm very much an all people type of person based on that.
And within that, was entrepreneurship something you grew up with too? I think that bringing communities together, I think, is going to be a running theme of today's podcast. But how about the entrepreneurship side?
Well, yeah. So he created that particular organisation in my grandma's living room. And then he bootstrapped. That means obviously he funded everything himself to create this community centre. And then he also created his own business, Bennett's Upholstery. So I would help him, and he also used to buy properties and do them up. So I'd be knocking walls down with him and just learning how to really graft. If you want something, it's not, you just don't just eventually just get it and that's it. There's steps along the way. So I was actually there as a child, literally getting myself down and dirty, helping him lift settees, you know, doing the buttonholing and going to clients' houses, negotiating the rates. And in those days, he was doing Chesterfields from scratch himself in his own garage with a compressor and everything. And they were selling for like £7,000-£8,000 at a time. And we'd drive to Essex itself and different places, and I understood the business model and how that without having a good connections with people and engaging with them, you really couldn't get the business first of all, and then B, then sustain having that customer and then for them to then sell on your behalf, you know. So I learned from a very, very young age.
So very much immersed in that entrepreneurial environment, how to spot opportunities, keep those customers coming. But what was your first job?
Wow, my first job, and I wouldn't even call it a job, it didn't even last a week. I worked on a fruit and veg stall in Preston Market. And in those days, you had to calculate all of it in your head. You had to do the scales, not electric, by the way, the scales, and work out pounds and, you know, and really, and tot up all these things. It was so taxing. So yeah, no, it didn't last long. And then I went and then started working in a chicken shop and kebab shop. And that's where I started excelling, because I started saving all my money.
Brilliant. So straight in with, right, you know, boots on the ground, getting sales, customer service, maths. I also struggled. I would not have been able to do the mental maths on a fruit and veg stand.
I was 14, by the way, at the time, just so you know. Yeah.
But how did your career develop from there? You know, did you go straight into starting your own business, or did you work for others to begin with?
Well, to begin with, I worked within the pizza shop and kebab shops. I just moved around various ones. And this one particular gentleman, he owned this kebab shop. Before I even thought about my next steps, I was 16 at the time, and he took me under his wings. I actually had a bank account with HSBC, but it wasn't, my wages weren't going in there. And he saw something in me, and he actually went to Halifax and set up an account for me for my wages going directly in. And he gave me this pep talk about that I can choose what I want for my future, and I should have, don't just stay in this position that I'm in, and you can possibly go to university. And he gave me so many different options. And I never even thought I could do anything more, because I thought that was it. Just work my way through this pizza kebab shop. I ended up, from his advice, moving from Preston on my own to London and going to South Bank University. So yeah, and then the rest is history.
Oh, fantastic. So you're at university. What happens next? What happens next in your career?
Right, so started university, doing so well. I was doing estate management, because I wanted to follow in my dad's footsteps with the properties and everything else. And I got through and did, my law was really going really good guns within the modules. And then I got myself pregnant. I know. Then I had to move back to Preston, and then I had to just reinvent myself. So I actually asked myself, what do I truly want to do for me? Not for anyone else, not because I want to follow in anyone's footsteps. And I decided I wanted to do travel and tourism. So eventually I worked my way through to the point where I ended up getting my master's in tourism management. And it wasn't easy. I was a single parent by that time, and I was having to juggle working and then changing in the car park, then going to university, then getting back to work and trying to handle childcare. But I did it. I persevered and I did it. So yeah, that's how it started.
Amazing. And that already, that sort of determination, creative thinking, I think, as well, of that, all right, this isn't what I'd originally planned, but we're going to make this an opportunity. Definitely coming through loud and clear already. So you work in the tourism industry. Is that where your sort of career went next?
Yeah, so I used to take people around the world, and I also used to be on part of fam trips as well. And then on my birthday, the Travel Trade Gazette TTG had this advertisement for a job with the government of this organisation, and it was a tourist board representative, and I applied and I got the job. And the irony is, everything happens for a reason, because had I not had the master's degree, I wouldn't be eligible. So we've got to be forward thinking. Don't just think, oh well, everything's, there's no point doing something. Always try and accrue and attain and actually just start creating things, even if you don't have an end goal, because it will come in useful. You never know when it will come in useful. So having that helped me get the really good job. So I used to have to stand in for the High Commissioner at events and be the person who's speaking and talking about the country and just promoting it in the best way possible and taking people out to the most opulent locations in the Caribbean. It was just amazing. Everything just changed. I started realizing that, you know, I can do a lot more than what I thought I could do. So yeah.
And then you've gone on this journey. You've sort of found yourself, found a bit of a rhythm, found that voice, that sort of inner confidence. But then something happened in 2011 that changed absolutely everything. Tell us about it.
It actually did. And before I tell you that, so even though I used to stand up and speak, I used to say to myself, the irony of all of this, oh, I'm no good at this, because my dad, now he was a speaker. He would command a room. If he started talking, everyone would just circle around him and hang on his every word. Even people that couldn't speak English properly, you know, German, all different languages. So I used to always say to myself, there's no way I could do what my dad did. And then unfortunately, in 2011, my dad was brutally tortured to death. And everything changed. Everything changed. I had to just channel to myself. And I said to myself, well, what would my dad do? So I actually started fighting for justice. I hired private investigators. I was getting death threats myself. And it was just an insane time. And then instead of my organisation supporting me, they decided to suspend me. So you Google me. It's in the Daily Mail, the Mirror, everything. You'll see all of it. Eventually, through persevering, I actually won on all counts on both court cases. So one of the murderers got 40 years to life without parole, and then I won on the actual tribunal on all counts. So, yeah. And that made me again realise I've got so much more than what I realise. I can do so much. Even in the worst situations, I can still push through. But I can push through with dignity because I never screamed and shouted at anyone. I was never underhanded, even though people were really awful towards me. And it wasn't people. It was one particular person who really spearheaded it. But they had no choice but to support her because she was at the head of the organisation. And I realised that, you know, something, you cannot tar everybody with the same brush because of one person. And that's actually helped me keep my dignity and keep moving forward. And that's where I am now today.
And that is, you know, I am one of those people who obviously in research for the podcast have looked up your backstory. And my goodness, the struggles you went through to get justice for your father, the years it took and the emotional toll it must have taken must just have been extraordinary. What I found particularly extraordinary is how you turned that experience into something positive as well. You know, like you say, you kept your dignity and you've sort of kept fighting through, but also then used it to start the Multicultural Business and Community Champions Awards.
Yes. So the MBCC Awards, I created that because I wanted to say thank you to the people that actually helped and supported me. And that was my local MP, as well as the police officers who were my FLOs, family liaison officers. And I thought, well, I want to do something special for them, but I want to give them a particular honorary award. And there wasn't any honorary awards out there. A category within an award system. So I decided to create this. And while I was creating it, I was literally doing this all on my own. There was nobody else around there helping me. And I realized that, well, while I'm doing this, why don't I allow other people to be recognized and valued and give them the opportunity? And that's simply how the MBCC Awards started. And the answer to your question before about, well, how did you obviously get through it? My dad would always say, take the emotion out and put the passion in. So that's why I would never be an emotional person outwardly. No one would even think that I have a tear in my body or any emotion in my body in terms of saying, oh, life is not fair, woe is me. Because I always channel these proactive sayings that my dad would teach me. So yeah, so take the emotion out and put the passion in.
That is an incredible saying. That is it sounds like your father was a pretty special man with a lot of incredible advice and insights. Just tell us a little bit more about the MBCC Awards and what it is today. Because obviously, you know, I'm one of those lucky people who have been there, seen it, been a judge. But it really is an incredible celebration of really sort of diverse communities coming together to create positive change.
Yes, it is. And so the MBCC Awards, it's literally is a platform for recognising and valuing unsung heroes in both the business and the community world that go the extra mile. And in 2018, I decided to reach out to Sir Lenny Henry. So I managed to secure him. And then it just changed the whole process of the MBCC Awards. And then I brought True Powell on. And then he was the CEO. And then True ran with what I created with the celebrity angle. And he started pulling in some more celebrities. But obviously, when True came on board, everything was set. You know, we already had sponsors. We already had a structure. The MBCCs was always sold out. So at least when he came in, there was something to work with, which was fantastic.
Absolutely. But Now, back onto your business. So, you know, like I say, you've had this life-changing experience with your father. You've channeled some of that into positivity, like I say, creating the MPCC Awards. How did it impact your career? Is that when you decided to go it alone and become an entrepreneur?
Absolutely. From working for an organisation that didn't support you, but then tried to vilify you for something that was not your fault. I wasn't even in the country. And it was a bungled robbery, by the way, if anyone's wondering. My dad was a very giving and caring person. So this was just an unfortunate, someone's trying to steal from my dad. And I was actually meant to be there that morning. And my plans changed last minute. So unfortunately, what they wanted to do was to kill us all so they can then occupy the property and the cars, etc. But as I survived, I realised I just don't want other people going through what I've gone through. And so I created Training Personified Limited to teach people about customers, not just external customers, but internal customers, that they are just as important. Now, bearing in mind, within my master's degree, I did my dissertation on the service industry and leadership and the actual internal mechanisms, which are the actual employees and, you know, how you can empower them, etc. So it was just already running through me anyway. So I had the key skills for it. So I just thought, you know what, I'm going to teach people customer service. But it actually outgrew me. The company, in terms of what I wanted to do, what other people wanted from me, was completely different. So they wanted my story, wanted to hear my story, and me talking and delivering training around that. So I've literally had to pivot within Training Personify to do leadership training, customer service, resilience training. But it was predominantly more doing the talk with blended training. So that's how really it got created.
Was it scary going it alone? You know, you've just been through a very traumatic incident. You're a mum. Like, how was that feeling of going?
No, because I refuse. I would rather be homeless, lose every ounce of pennies that I have, than work for anyone ever again in my life, to ever allow someone to put my destiny in their hands. And for me to make me feel as if I'm doing something wrong, when all what happened was my dad was murdered. I was vilified for my dad being murdered, you know.
Bit of context on that. That was because the country in which your father was murdered also happened to be the country that you were representing on the tourism board.
Absolutely, yeah. there's the context on that, which was absolutely stupid, because I recognise it's not the country that killed him, it's an individual, you know, or individuals that killed him. But, you know, unfortunately, other people didn't know that was probably my mentality, and thought maybe I might comfort them, but that's just not my nature. It just really isn't. But no, I actually bootstrapped the organisation again. I've never gone and got funding for anything that I've done. Even the jewellery line that I've started, that's trademarked in UK, Europe and USA. Everything, my gift sets, my books, everything that I've done and do, and even the MBCC to get it started, I bootstrapped that to get it started. So, you know, yeah, I just refuse to allow anyone for me to feel that I owe anybody anything.
This is an excellent opportunity for a cheeky plug for your jewellery range. What's the name of the range and where can we find it?
Motivational Queen, and you can find it at motivationalqueen.com under shop.
Fantastic. So you've gone through that process. You've set up a business, like you say, you've bootstrapped, you've got it up and running. It's perhaps evolved and changed from what you thought it would be. Is there anything that you look back on now that you go, God, I wish I'd known that when I was first setting out? That would have made this so much easier.
Do you know, funnily enough, I was speaking about this yesterday. So I actually I'm a giver. I'm a complete giver and a giver of my time. And I would never really charge people. I realise now you cannot pour from an empty cup. And until I'm overflowing, until you're overflowing, you can't really give all you can possibly give. And that slowed down me being where I should have been in the business already. Last year changed everything, because I actually cut out a lot of people that weren't meaning me very good, and I got to focus on me. And the issue that I had in the beginning of my business is that I focused and I was supporting other people. I would turn up and do talks for them. So the time I'm giving them, I was taking it away from myself. And I even had an actual contract, a really good contract that I paused to help somebody. And then that person then went on and did something completely different. So it made it harder for me to keep going. However, that's a learning curve. I don't regret it. I now see now where I've gone wrong. And now as a result of that, I've just secured a six-figure contract this year with an employability company. And it's the future's bright because of knowing, of having that now, that knowledge of now what not to do and what to do. So yeah, as much as I'm very, how would I put it? I am charitable and I do a lot and give a lot charitable. I now have to make sure that I am flowing so that I can give more at another end, yeah.
Absolutely. It's not selfish to focus on you and your business.
It's selfful.
Oh, good one. Excellent. So tell us a little bit more about Training Personified then. You know, you've chosen to work with what are often called, say, hard-to-reach groups, so-called hard-to-reach groups. So you've done a lot of work with, say, the long-term unemployed, those with mental health conditions, survivors of domestic abuse, as well as leaders in business and beyond. But what inspired you to really focus your efforts there?
It's lived experience. So everything I do, I'm a firm believer that you have to eat, sleep, and, you know, just really go through it before you can really say you're an expert to share with someone else and help them get through that what they need to get through. And through my lived experience, and one thing is very evident, no matter who you are, somebody's gone through something. It doesn't have to be really significant, but it's something to them. And teaching people that they're not alone and there's the way forward can change, no matter who you are, can change a life. And I found that from, because I was the extreme adversity. So not only had my dad been murdered, a few years before that, in my 20s, a perpetrator nearly killed me in my own home, and they served 3 years in jail for the, you know, for the attack on me. So I've been through so much, and to push through that was very, very difficult, but I got through it. So when other people talk about their traumas, I get it. I've even put myself through university and doing psychology and you know, so I've got my level 4, and now I'm working from a level 5 through to 7, because I'm going to become, I am on my way to becoming a bona fide PhD doctor. That's my plan. And for me, I want to just make sure that when someone's talking to me, they feel in a safe space. And I find that anytime that when I do the opening with any of the sessions, especially for the unemployed, and I share my story, everyone then turns up, because they have a dropout rate a lot when you deal with employability and training. But when they feel they're connected to you, they feel that, you know, something, there's camaraderie, and then they will turn up and they'll work with you. Because what they find is people talking at them, and there's some people talking textbook at them, but I don't script anything. We have a framework, but we keep it fluid and based on them, and that's the difference.
Mm, and that very authentic approach to sort of speaking from the heart and from experience. Like I say, you also do lots of work with entrepreneurs and businesses and have travelled far and wide as a motivational speaker. Tell us about some of the highlights of your career.
Oh, cool, blimey. Well, right now I've got the partnership deal with NatWest Bank again. So I've got the Motivational Queen Masterclass with them, and I help business owners level up. And the highlights for me, full stop, is when I see them soaring. And even though I'm not saying to people, oh, it was me that was delivering and giving some tips, and just seeing them win, I feel like a winner. For me, that is it, you know. And it's not about paying it backwards to me. I'm all about paying it forward. So once they thrive and I see they're helping other people thrive, I feel so accomplished. It's unreal.
Fantastic. And like I say, being able to see that impact and see that success, really wonderful. Yeah, wonderful experience. You're also a published author. I mean, you're a pretty accomplished person. Like I say, I'm getting the impression you're constantly learning, constantly pushing yourself, adapting, evolving your career. Also a published author, Networking Personified, a straight-talking guide to networking success. Thinking about it, I'm pretty sure that's how we met years ago, networking. But of course, we love network building at the Chamber. What would you say your top networking tips are?
There's three things, but two of them I will tell you is be interested, as opposed to being interesting. So what that means is ask people questions, find out about them, and remember those things about them. Don't just say, oh, me, I done this, I done that, I am this. It's not about being interesting all the time. Yes, people want to know about you, but if you actually focus on the other person first, you'll get a lot more from them. The other thing that is in my book is The Smiling Assassin. And it's free. It's free to smile, but you will surprise yourself if that you don't come across as if you're chewing a wasp, but you actually are smiling, how much more people will gravitate towards you. And it's as simple as that.
Fantastic. And really good practical advice there. Like you say, be interested, not interesting. Love the smiling assassin. Because there's also something about when people are networking and out and about looking to build relationships, it can be quite nerve-wracking for people. So someone who radiates sort of, you know, a bit of confidence and a bit of joy, absolutely, it's a real draw. Are there any common mistakes that people make when it comes to networking?
Oh, gosh, yeah. It's about what they could... A lot of people seem to think, oh, well, if I don't go there and get something, then it's not worked for me. Or I'm seeing the same people again. Well, no, because it's about building relationships. You can't just see someone once and then you've built a relationship. It doesn't work like that. And some people think, oh, well, it wasn't that well attended. No, it gives you more time to have that one-on-one time. It's about the mindsets, how you really think about approaching it. So you've got to stop thinking about what can I get out of it. It's about what can I put into it is more what you need to be asking yourself, and not expecting someone to share their connections with you straight away. That's the biggest thing. And your facial expressions, if they don't do it straight away, is the biggest giveaway. So the smiling assassin, just bring it out and it will mask everything.
Absolutely. I know that's such a common misconception of networking, isn't it? Because I do a lot of talks with young professionals who are just starting. And there's this misconception, it's about sales. You go into a room and sell stuff to people. And that, like you say, it's not it at all. It's all that relationship building, how you build up that trust, that network. And those are some excellent pieces of advice and good pitfalls to watch out for. Now, you've done a lot. You've achieved a lot. You've had some pretty extraordinary highs and lows. And just last year, you received a British Empire Medal, a BEM, in the Birthday Honours List for services to charity and inspiring disadvantaged people. So how did that recognition feel? What did that whole experience mean to you?
Do you know something? I've been numb to the whole thing, not in a negative way. It's because I'm just doing me. So it just feels odd. If I don't know how to explain, it just feels odd. But it feels nice that someone's gone to the lengths to obviously put me forward for this. And the biggest thing for me out of it is the fact it says I've received it for inspiring disadvantaged individuals. Now, sorry, but just those three words alone, it did say other words, but those three words is that's it. I feel like I've done what I needed to do. I came here on this planet and that's what I want to do. Is I don't want anyone to feel disadvantaged. I don't want anyone to feel that they can't push forward because, and I'll tell you it's a deep meaning behind it. So when I was at school, I actually was the only black female child in this school. My mum and dad sent me to a posh school. And my mum, for some reason, would not let me play with black children. Yes. And because, for her reasons. But my dad was created this West Indian club. So there's lots of black kids there. So it was really odd. So I went to this posh school and all the kids' parents had farms or were very affluent. We weren't that way inclined, but we had more than our own ethnicity. And so I was actually singled out by the teachers and they really racially bullied me. And then when I was then went to my dad's community centre and the black kids were there, they would circle, put me in the centre, do ring of roses but in a different way, and they would call me posh N, circling me. So I could never win. So for me, I've just lived not knowing who I was. I would have, in when I was walking in the streets, people would call me the P word. So I actually thought I was a Pakistani for many, many, I genuinely thought I was a Pakistani for many years because I was called it so often. So I just, my identity was shot. It might sound odd now as an adult thinking about it, like, well, obviously you're not. But as a kid, I didn't know where I belonged, who I was. And that feeling, you know, you talk about my dad being murdered and he was my heartbeat, my everything. That growing up feeling was far worse. So by the time my dad was murdered, I'd actually kind of got myself like this shield around me that I'd got myself resolved. So I was able then to move and then fight for justice, because I was just so solid as a person by this time. So, and I realised that the mental anguish that I went through growing up and trying to find out who I was, and then this attack happened to me. And I'm not afraid to say this, after the attack in my 20s, it was horrendous. You know, I actually tried to kill myself, and it never succeeded. And I was so annoyed with myself. And I'm like, I can't even get that right. So, and then it turned around, everything turned around, because when they tried to put me through counselling, they wanted to try and regress me back to when I was younger, instead of dealing with the situation. And I realised in that moment, if anyone's going to get me forward, it has to be me. Otherwise, people are going to make me into the puppet that they want me to be and put me in the direction that they want me to go into. And that's how I became the way I am. And I detest knowing that someone's going through something and I can't help them to get those strategies to help them out of it.
And that experience, that growing up as an outsider and then all the trauma you've experienced as an adult, like I say, it's just extraordinary resilience that I see in you for continuing to move forward, adapt, keep pushing forward. And like you say, it gives you that incredible authenticity when you're working with people who have been through their own traumas and own challenges in life. That comes through so loud and clear. I'm going to flip the conversation now. So you're very driven. You are someone who I think doesn't stop very often. But what do you do for fun? How do you relax?
My fun is trivia. I play lots of trivia on my phone. I have to keep my brain trained. So when I had the COVID injection, I presume most people had it, the first injection, I actually had 20/20 vision. I had my eyes lasered and everything. And when I had that injection, I could barely see. And my memory literally went. I was struggling to remember the most simplest things. And luckily I was into trivia anyway. So I actually then switched it up and did more word games, and actually I trained my brain back to be who I am back again now. Honestly, trivia helps. So not only does it help you just be quicker and switched on, but you learn things as well. Depends what type of trivia that you do.
Oh, absolutely. And like you say, a really good fun thing that you can do on the go as well. Because I'm getting the sense you do not sit still for very long. And speaking of not sitting still, what's your favourite thing to do in Birmingham?
Oh, gosh. I don't have time to do anything in Birmingham. The most famous, I tell you.
Network.
Eating. I'm an eater. And I don't apologise for it. I am on the chunky side. But I think I call myself fat, pretty, hot and tempting. That's what I am.
And what's your favourite food? Do you have favourite restaurants?
Oh, I actually found this one just as because I live in Sutton. On the way up to Sutton, there's a little Thai restaurant called Kin. It just opened about a few months ago, and it's so lush.
Oh, good tip. I'm going to have to check that one out. Right, we're now coming to the end of today's podcast. This has just been absolutely fascinating, Zoe, like learning more about you, seeing your approach, seeing how all of this is sort of built to who you are today. But when you think back over your career, are there leaders and individuals that have inspired you along the way? You've spoken about your father. You've spoken about that employer who took you under his wing. Who is it that's really inspired you?
Do you want to know the truth?
Go on.
I used to have a picture of him above my bed when I was 7 years old. John Collins.
Powerhouse.
Absolutely. She was my inspiration because, I didn't know who I was, and I wanted to be someone who was sure of themselves and just be like John Collins. And hopefully I have a blend of John Collins and Tina Turner mixed together. So you can take everything from me, you can strip me with all the assets and worldly goods, but I have my name and I will rise.
Amazing. And this is also the first time Joan Collins has come up on the podcast. So great choice. And then finally, you've given lots of good advice throughout this podcast. You know, I've been jotting down lots of sort of good phrases, good tidbits. But if you could leave us with just one piece of advice for aspiring CEOs, what would it be?
Be uniquely you. Never be afraid to show up as you. And don't try and carbon copy anyone else, because you cannot replicate the blueprint.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Zoe. It really has been a pleasure talking to you today. And to all our listeners, of course, don't forget to subscribe to CEO Stories wherever you get your podcasts. Check out Zoe's range at motivationalqueen.com. Yeah, motivationalqueen.com. And of course, make sure you keep on top of the latest news and views from the Chamber by following us on the social medias, Greater Birmingham Chambers of Commerce on LinkedIn, and checking out the news on our website.